Season 6, Episode 3, Numb and Number. It opens up with Jill Kirkendall visiting the hospital where Russell is and where Bobby is still in the hospital. And Jill brings yogurt. Russell says that Bobby is comfortable. Then a hard cuts to the doctor talking to Bobby. And Bobby definitely looks worse.
Yeah, he seems to be struggling way more.
And he's like, yeah, I'm getting comfortable. And the doctor's like, if you're being honest with me, would you say it's actually getting worse? And he's like, yeah, probably.
Yeah, I'm not feeling too hot.
The doctor tells the nurse and Russell separately that he's going to have to go for another echocardiogram. As he's explaining it, Jill has kind of become the support system. Because a whole bunch of scenes happen separately in this. Simone gets another echocardiogram. At least that's what I think it's for. They keep just saying echo. I'm pretty sure it's an echocardiogram.
Yeah, it's for his heart, so yeah.
They make a slimy stuff joke. And then Simone's like, how is she doing? And he's like, oh, she's got a girlfriend with her. And he's like, blonde? And he's like, yeah. He's like, oh.
Blonde, good figure, good shape, I think is what he says.
And then he says, could you ask her to stay with her? And he says, sure. Her name's Jill, by the way. And he says, glad for the opportunity to converse. He looks at the results of the echocardiogram and says, I think we need to take that angiogram now. And Simone was like, I thought that would be in like 2 or 3 days. He's like, no, I think we're doing that now.
Which, like, I mean, not to go too far in, there's a scene later where, like, Simone's a little upset with, like, not getting information. I would feel upset, too. I feel like they're just, like, throwing things on him and expecting him to be like, yeah, let's do it, and not giving him an explanation why.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine he also is saying, like, well, I'm... The guy's like, well, we're trying to prevent you from dying. We don't really have a lot of time.
I'd like to ask Russell, when she's going through all of this, if she would want two people to go fuck around with this doctor while he was trying to get a nap before
he had to come
in and deal with Bobby. Or would she want that doctor to be able to sleep properly and get the, you know, rest he needs to be able to do his job? I would like to ask her that question while she's going through all of this.
Anyway, this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. I just put that episode up where we argue about that stupid thing for way too long.
Oh, I know. That's why it made me think about it.
Jeez.
I'm just saying, now that Bob, like, would Russell, now that he's going in for this test sooner than later, would Russell want a doctor who had been able to get all of the sleep that they needed? Or would she want a doctor that was woken up by two annoying-ass cops and fucked around with when that doctor should have been sleeping? Exactly. Yeah, and my point is, she'd probably want the doctor who got the rest. So my point exactly that her and Jill are fucking wrong.
So, like with the other episodes in Season 6, we're just going by chronologically what happens in the episode. And when we come back from the break, Sipowicz, Medavoy, and Martinez show up to a DOA. Sipowicz is like, what's that? Because Medavoy's on the phone. And Martinez says, Medavoy's on the phone with Jill. She's not coming in. He's like, when is that a 5-alarm fire? Because Sipowicz is just testy as fuck today.
Yeah, he from Jump Street, he is annoying.
They mention that it's Bobby. It turns out he's not doing well. And Jill is going to be there for support of Russell. They're like, oh yeah, they're deciding he has to take some tests sooner rather than later. And Sipowicz is like, on what basis? He's like, I don't think they talked to the doctor, Sipowicz. Like, they didn't talk to the person who decided to take those tests. So I don't know why you think Medavoy would know.
Yeah, this is like a third level of telephone when it comes to this information. Like, it's come from a doctor to Bobby and Diane to Jill to Medavoy to Sipowicz. And he wants to know, like, the fine details and shit.
Then, after Medavoy and Martinez kind of, like, convince each other out loud, they're just like, yeah, I mean, it's good, you know, they're taking the tests, and Jill's there, that's a good thing. And Simowitz is like, you know, you two are idiots. And then they're like, what? Then they respond like, what, Andy? He's like, you could be looking at an H-bomb and say, look at the poodle-shaped cloud. And then Metavoy...
I thought that was pretty funny.
It was pretty funny. But one thing that I liked was Metavoy's, like, moment of... I don't know what the word is. Moment of clarity or moment of... Because he says something very intelligent, at least I thought so, where he's like, what's your quarrel? That Jill's going to stay with her to support her? Like, what's the problem with what I said?
Metavoy, I do... Metavoy and Martinez do a pretty good job of this episode of deterring Andy from being a jackass.
Yeah, that's...
And they do the best that they can to make their job, like, doable, you know?
Yeah, I think that's going to be, like, the big conversation is how they prevented Andy from really fucking up his standing in this police department, but then ask the question, like, why do they have to rein this dude in? You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, why is everybody protecting Andy, and why isn't it just, hey, Andy, guess what? You're going home.
Go home if you can't handle yourself.
Yeah, exactly. During this argument, a uniformed cop walks up. He's like, hey, do you want to know about this DOA? And Ed Sipowicz is like, oh, yeah, you walk away from your crime scene just to squeeze shoes. And the uniform is like, oh, it's a DOA, multiple stab wounds, no witnesses, no weapons. And a dog walker found him. Oh, well, the dog found him, and the dog walker is the first human to see it. And he's like, oh, I'm so glad you came up to me to tell me that. So important. Like, Simmons is like, now he's all like, fuck this cop. And that's what I love. I love when Sipowicz is like, when Sipowicz is flustered, he suddenly just becomes like Don Rickles to everybody. Like, everybody's an idiot.
You love when he misplaces his anger towards the wrong people?
Well, yeah, because it's really funny. If it was me, I'd be pretty upset, but...
Yeah, no, he does say some pretty fun shit. And then he does some inappropriate shit, like grab a woman's face and, like, squeeze it.
Yeah, yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, this opening scene, it's just them, you know, finding little clues. There's a button off a blue jacket that Metavoy wouldn't have even noticed because he was standing on it, which I found pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, it just adds to his incompetency as a detective.
The DOA has his pants down, and Metavoy's like, yeah, maybe he was taking a leak. And Simwood's is like, yeah, Metavoy, that's the reason his pants were down in the park. And like, Jesus Christ, he can't even voice an idea.
If I'm going to a park and I'm going to go pee, I'm not, like, pulling my pants down around my ankles, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're not doing a Butters.
Yeah, yeah. I'm keeping my pants on in case 5-0 shows up and I gotta keep walking.
Well, yeah, you gotta worry about 5-0 when you're taking those public urines. Those public urines. That's not what I wanted to say, but my brain just cut it off at urine. They notice that the dude has, like, a $100 shirt on. They get his wallet. It's Tariq Hansen. Or Tariq Hassim. I wrote his name very small for some reason. An appliance sales manager. And this one looky-loo is just walking around. And Sipowicz even says, let him walk over to us, don't tell him to come see us. What's awesome is when the guy comes over, he's like, hey, what's going on in there? He's like, a dead guy, you know anything about it? And they, like, jump over the bench, and they surround him immediately.
Yeah, they all three come at this guy, like, real quick.
He's like, what do you know about it, huh? What's the deal? And he just mentions, yeah, he got taken off by a woman, and he saw that woman go with this guy into the bushes. He describes her as a hopped up half a hooker with rings in her nose. And I was like, isn't that like a Bob Dylan song?
Was this a Bob Dylan song after he went electric?
Yeah, this is his electric years.
Or is this specifically guitar only?
The next scene is with... And it's one of those weird things where we were just with Metavoy, Martinez, and Sipowicz, and then when we cut to another scene, we're still with Metavoy, Martinez, and Sipowicz. And they bring in Trish McFarlane, the hopped up half a hooker with rings in her nose. And
it's either a Bob Dylan song or a Dr. Seuss book that's now been banned.
Kyle, they're canceling Dr. Seuss. They're canceling him. He has been canceled. We can't talk about him anymore. He's erased from history.
He's not, though. There's still tons of books that are okay.
No, no, Kyle. No. So they bring in Trish. She says she wasn't in Tompkins Square Park. Sipowicz is hard from the moment go. Like, he is super aggressive. They get out of Trish that there was a second girl that she was going to set up the robbery with. When she's like, oh, he was going to start making out with him, and then I'm going to lift his wallet. And Sipowicz is like, perish the thought. She then says the other woman started the robbery too early, and then a Spanish guy came out and stabbed the dude when he got physical.
When he got what?
When the guy that they were robbing got physical, when he started hitting the
physical.
Oh, well, now I'm going to have to take it down, because we're going to get copyright claimed, because you sing it too good.
Bring it on, Olivia Newton-John.
Sipowicz grabs the woman's face to demand names.
Yeah, a little too rough, too.
Little rough house. She gives up the names Ramona Garza and Frankie Soto, and then Sipowicz is like, you're going to tape a statement, and she's like, why?
Because I said so.
He makes some weird Audrey Hepburn comment, which I was like, okay. And then I just wrote down Audrey Hepburn. I don't even remember exactly what he said. I just found it weird that he referenced her. And then after...
I guess I'm here for it, right?
And then as he left, Trish goes, that guy's dangerous. And we're like, yeah, no shit. He seems unhinged.
Sipowicz is like one bad life decision away from being a career criminal.
I wanted to mention that Trish McFarlane seemed like a famous face to me. And it's Suzanne Kroll, and she's been in a little bit of everything, but I did not recognize anything that jumped out at me. So Suzanne Kroll, you have a face that seems recognizable, but you're not in stuff that I know immediately.
But it ain't, bitch. That's basically what Kirk's saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
You got a face that's recognizable, but it ain't.
No, but it ain't, bitch. Remember, you gotta say, but it ain't, bitch.
Yeah, yeah. And happy International Woman, or happy Women's Day too.
Well, that was Monday, and
we could be a little late to the game.
I think it's Women's Month, though. They get a whole month now too.
We can be late to the game. Women are used to it.
Now they have a month, Kyle. Soon they're gonna have the whole year, and then what will white men like us have? Nothing.
Power.
The full dollar to their 70 cents.
Like in a weird way, like, we granted that month to them, so I feel like we kind of win.
Oh, gross. Exclamation point. Sipowicz runs down what's happening for Fancy, and then flips on Medavoy when he asks if he wants to call Sylvia.
Yeah, he needs to get his emotions in check.
Because Medavoy's like, hey, do you want to call Sylvia? And he's like, if I want to call Sylvia, I'll call Sylvia. So then Medavoy starts to call Sylvia, and Sipowicz goes and gets his coat, and while Medavoy's on the phone with Sylvia, he's like, hey, I want to get to these guys before sunset, Medavoy. And I was like, Jesus Christ, man.
And then doesn't he start bitching to Fancy while Medavoy's on the phone about Sylvia? Because
yeah, he says
all,
that...
All Sylvia did was like, I tried to be fucking supportive and helpful.
Well, yeah, Sylvia said, according to... This is actually really funny. According to Sipowicz, Sylvia told him, it's gonna be fine. We find out later, that's not what Sylvia said. So, which means Sipowicz didn't even listen. So, Sipowicz and Medavoy go after these two people that Trish gave up. It cuts back to Simone, who's getting a angiogram.
Yes.
Yeah, and they, which is where they put a catheter or a little thing through the veins in your body to go examine your heart. And they're looking at Simone's heart, and he's laying on a cold hospital table thing. And Simone just goes, "Can I say something?" And they're like, "Sure." He's like, "I'm cold. I'm having trouble breathing, and I really gotta urinate." And then the doctor, very coldly, I wanted to mention how cold this dude sounded. He's like, you're cold because the table you're on is cold. You're having trouble breathing because you're lying flat. And you have to urinate. I forgot why he said that. So Simone is like, okay, great. I still have to pee. I still can't breathe. And I'm still really cold. Like, you didn't solve those problems.
Yeah, he gets, like, his response. Like, this is the first time that this dude has been, like, his responses haven't been very bedside mannerly, you know?
As they're looking inside his heart, they find no blockages, which is actually a pretty big problem. I guess I'll talk about it in a minute when we get to that scene. But I was having a thought where it's like, I know a little bit about the heart, and I feel like I would be able to know what this guy is talking about when he's talking about what he found in Bobby, but it seems like Russell has no fucking idea how the heart works. And it kind of got me a little frustrated.
It doesn't seem like anybody knows how the heart works other than the doctors. Like, everyone seems like so lost.
Yeah, completely
and like,
lost.
Like, don't even tell Sipowicz like you're giving him an echocardiogram. You know what I mean? Like, you better just explain. Like, you're taking a picture of the heart. You know, like he doesn't get. It's very, very interesting.
Because he finds that there's no blockages, so he takes a biopsy of the heart, which means getting a little bit of tissue to examine. Simone mentions again, he's like, I cannot breathe and I have to piss. So. They lift him up a little bit so he can catch his breath, and they get him a urinal, and fucking even the doctor then was like, okay, sit him up a little bit, get him a urinal, and I was like, dude, the guy can't breathe and he has to piss. Like, the least you could do is let the man fucking pee and breathe for a moment.
I mean, I get it, but he's also kind of being a little bitch.
Nurse, we have ourselves a bitch here. Get a urinal.
Hey, we got an LB. LB in exam room, too.
As they give him a urinal, he goes, close your eyes, and then you literally hear him pissing into a urinal, which was a nice touch. Glad they did that. Glad they put that in.
Yeah, I was like, I'm glad they paid for that extra Foley work.
I want to be the Foley guy that gets the call. Hey, NYPD Blue needs some sounds. Okay, got it. What do you need? We need pissing into a urinal? He's like, really?
No, but it's not any urinal. It's a bedpan.
Yeah, like, we need pissing into
a metal bedpan. So, you know, I gotta get that splash sound that everyone loves.
Also, it's gonna be covered up by, like, a sheet and a gown. So could you kind of cover it? But also, it's gotta clearly be a dude pissing into a bedpan.
We need to recognize how big his hog is, too.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised there wasn't a moment when the nurse lifted up the thing and was just like, Jesus, and then had to leave the room because she flooded the floor.
Adios mio.
Why is she Hispanic, Kyle? Or it was a white nurse speaking Spanish. It was also a male.
That's how big it was. That it made a white girl, a white nurse speak Spanish.
Sipowicz, we cut to Sipowicz and Medavoy, and they walk up on this bar, and for some reason they have a dude, there's like this guy who comes outside the bar, who just immediately gives it up. He's like, man, okay, I got weed, guys, okay, I got a roach in my pocket, and
was
it like,
he was talking about weed, right? Yeah, that's
yeah.
What I thought. Okay.
And then Sipowicz and Simone are like, do you know Frankie Soto? And he's like, no, this isn't my regular place, and then they just leave him. Like, they don't even say anything to him, they just leave him there.
Yeah, because that's not what they're there for, and the dude's kind of a mope anyway, so I just feel like they're not even going to waste their time.
When they walk in, they go right to the bar, and Sipowicz asks the bartender, hey, do you know where Frankie Soto is? And he's like, I don't ask their names. And he's like, so you don't know anybody in here? And he goes, no. And so Sipowicz is like, everybody up! It's just like,
yeah, he's like, put your IDs on the table.
It'll be a lot easier if one of you just comes forward as Frankie Soto. And then we see Frankie Soto, and it is Danny Trejo.
And, that's pretty cool.
And normally when I do Famous Faces, I put the actor's name and then in parentheses what they're known for. And since it was Danny Trejo, I just put Danny Trejo, known for basically everything. He's been
Danny
in.
He's just with Danny Trejo, known for being Danny Trejo.
Was in prison, became Eric Roberts' fight coach, and then now is one of like the most well-known Hispanic actors of all time.
Yeah, owns a bunch of taco places in L.A.
Also, it seems like a pretty decently nice dude. He's like, I'm Frankie Soto, and then Sipowicz, because he's being an asshole today, yells at the bartender, hey, Peckerhead, let me introduce you to Frankie Soto.
I love when he does that, because it's like, that guy, and then the guy goes like, oh, I didn't know you meant him.
And he's like, oh, the other Frankie Soto, this is who you thought I was talking about.
Yeah.
And they start shaking him down, they find a knife, and he's like, oh, were you stabbing people in Thompson Square Park yesterday? He's like, no, yesterday I was beating up this woman.
Yeah, this is a woman standing with, like, a black eye standing right next to him.
And they're like, how did you get this? He's like, he gave it to me when we fought here last night. And then he points at, like, the mirror behind them. He's like, yeah, I put her head into that. And you're like, okay, I know that you're avoiding a murder charge, but do you want to just freely admit beating up a woman?
Kirk, what makes it even better is everyone else around them just starts going, like, yeah. They were here at, like, 10 o'clock, and they beat the fuck out of each other till 3 when they were thrown out. And, yeah, that's cool. Like, that was it. Like, it was like, yeah, they just beat the fuck out of each other, and it's all good. It's all gravy.
And then she mentions, oh, yeah, don't worry, I'm just gonna get him back while he's asleep. And like, okay, well, that's premeditated murder.
Yeah.
You're
gonna cut his dick off, maybe.
So... Also, I don't know about you, but the first thing I thought when they started with the story and everybody in the bar agreed was like, oh, they're coming... Because I didn't know how this episode ended.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, so they're lying and the whole bar just covered for them instinctively?
I think the first time I watched it, I thought the same thing because I felt the bar patrons, like, were sloppy with their story.
Because I thought they heard, like... Oh, I did it to her when we were here fighting. Yeah. And they're all like, yeah, totally. He was here. He was here, totally. They never leave. And it was like,
because the second guy even says something kind of weird where he's like, yeah, they came in at 10 and I agree with you.
So then Sipowicz is like, are you going to press charges on him for this? He's like, no, I'm going to get him back. So then Sipowicz grabs his blade and then breaks it on the bar.
Did you see how it, like, I thought that was an interesting point because Sipowicz goes to slam... Like, I think what they wanted is Sipowicz to, like, slam it down into, like, the wood, deep into the wood, and then snap it.
Uh-huh.
But instead, I think they... To be able to break it, he has to stab it perfectly in between two pieces of wood. But the gap between the woods was, like, comical, in my opinion.
It was pretty
like,
obvious.
Like, there would be, like, if you were at a bar and it was nice, there would be, like, the... I don't know. I just thought that was funny, like, a small detail. And he put, like, this whole thing. And then when he snaps it, you can definitely tell that it's, like, a plastic knife.
it's a weak-ass fake knife. After Sipowicz breaks that blade, the doctor comes to talk to Russell... like you said, he never talks to Kirkendall directly. He says, like, oh, hi. And Russell's like, oh, this is Jill. And he's like, yeah, we met. And she's like, hi again. And the doctor's got to give her a lot of very bad information very quickly. Which is, he's like, we did the angiogram. He's got no blockages. So she immediately asks, well, are you going to do a bypass? Which, it feels like if you have the moment to be logical, you'd realize that a bypass would be for blockages. If there's no blockages, what are you bypassing? These aren't just words. Like, they convey things. Like, it was something that bothered me that shouldn't have bothered me, but it did.
It's fair.
Like, if somebody was like, you know, we've... Because basically what she's asking is, the guy says, hey, so we found no obstructions on the road. The road is perfectly fine. You can drive down. She goes, okay, so there's a detour? It's like, yeah. No, there isn't. I'm saying that there isn't.
No, not is there a detour. Oh, so are we going to take that detour we talked about?
It's like, that's obviously not the point. And he starts to talk about this as they wheel Bobby in, and there's a machine next to him now. And he says, we had to put a balloon inside of his heart, and this machine regulates it, so it'll keep his heart pumping. That's the moment you should be scared, obviously. Is now we have a machine that's pumping his heart for him.
Yeah, a little bit. Just a little bit.
Russell leaves in the middle of his explanation to talk to Bobby, and he mentions Bobby may not... What he says is, I'm telling you all of this because Bobby... I told Bobby, but I don't think he's going to remember because we had to drug his ass, like, pretty hard. She leaves in the middle of his explanation, and when Bobby says hi, he's like, hi, babe, and you're like, aww, fuck.
Yeah, he's gone.
And he says, he's like, well, I'm going to take a nap. He's like, I have to close my eyes a little bit. And Russell is like, she's losing it. And the doctor's like, well, I think we need to talk alone. So he brings her to a private office, and they sit down, and she immediately goes, is he dying? And he says, no, but we have to help him. And says,
okay, so, yeah. So really, the answer to that is yes.
Well, it's because like, he has decent bedside manner, because he's also doing, no offense to doctors, he's doing the standard doctor, I'm not telling you it's bad, I'm telling you that we can fix it. You know what I mean? So, because...
I guess, dude.
Because the answer to her question is he dying? 110% yes. His heart is failing.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you were to take that balloon out, he'd be dead. So he is dying.
And he's just letting her know, no, we just need to help him. And he mentions, well, if he starts to improve, we can put in a temporary fix for his artery. And she's like, if he improves. And he goes, yeah. Also, if he improves, he's probably going to need a transplant.
Yeah.
And she's like, she's immediately like losing it. And he's like, I know it feels like your world's falling apart, but transplant patients tend to live normal lives. And he says 5 years in, 80 to 90% have normal lives. And he's like, I personally know a 16-year-old transplant. Now, the question I have is, he says, after 5 years, it's 80 or 90%. So does that mean within 5 years, it's like fucking low as balls? Like, what does that mean?
That's where you can like fudge numbers and shit. That's where you can like use numbers. That's where you can use numbers to get for your advantage, even though they show something else. What if in the first 5 years, it's only like a 20% like survival rate, but after that, it's 90%. Yeah, but you can say, but you don't mention that, you know. I don't know. It's shady. It's some shady lady business as well.
Shady lady business. Some SLB.
Some SLB business that I'm not here for.
She comes out. Well, she wants to talk to Bobby, and he's like, "Could you send in Jill? But if Bobby's awake, I'll come see him." And then as he walks out, he finds out that Bobby's asleep. And then she goes up to Jill, and she tells Jill what's up. And then, but the way she does is like, he needs a better heart. And it's like, okay, word power's gone, I get it. The love of your life is dying.
Yeah, she always, but she, like, all of them in this show get like that when, like, they get emotional. Is like, they become like a fourth grader and don't know words.
So what you're saying is, if they endure some emotional trauma, they shouldn't go on Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Because they'll definitely lose.
Yeah. No. And like, Andy doesn't know how to put together like coherent sentences normally.
Well, unless he's pissed off. If he's pissed off, he can come up with like almost poetic words.
Fair enough.
Because like, the scene after this one, Sipowicz and Medavoy come back from finding out that the people she mentioned are just, like, not the case. They have good alibis. Sipowicz sees Sylvia, and he's like, so you heard? It? Like, he's so pissed at Sylvia for no fucking reason. Like, yeah, no reason at all.
She was just trying to be supportive and like like look on like look at the look at both sides of everything, and like he is just like, oh my god.
And he's like, well, I guess I won't take your medical advice, something to that effect. And she's and Sylvia's like, look, Andy, I just told you that thinking the worst doesn't help. So I didn't even, she didn't even say he's going to get better. She just said that thinking the worst isn't going to help.
Yeah.
And then he goes, okay, cool. Next time I'm at the optician, I'll get rose-colored glasses. Like, that's, that seems almost poetic. Like, just the cadence of it and the way he said it. And she's like, okay, well, here's that woman's statement. And he's like, yeah, well, that woman's a liar and the statement's fucking useless. So then she's like, look, you don't get to talk to me like a jerk because your fucking your partner is sick.
Yeah, 100%. it's just a bummer it took this fucking long to get there.
And Martinez thanks Sylvia and then asks Sipowicz what's up. And he's like, yeah, they have good alibis. When they walk into the office proper, Fancy gives the transplant news, and Sipowicz immediately bounces to that witness, or that woman. Like, yeah. Immediately. He is out the fucking door. And Fancy tells Manuel Martinez, like, hey, are you gonna get in there? And not, like, I feel like if Fancy was doing his job, he would have been like, Andy, you're not going in.
I agree, I think... But that's why I think he told Medavoy and Martinez to get in there as fast as they did.
But I also, but I mean...
I agree.
It also, Fancy may not know the whole story yet. I don't know if Medavoy got to him to tell him what was going on. But just the look on Sipowicz's face, like, if you know him, you'd be like, hey, nope, you're not going in. And then when Sipowicz gets pissy, he'd be like, are you going to yell at your boss? Or are you going to do what I say? And then he'd still yell and be like, okay, you can go home. Like, it's something that should have been cut off. Instead, Sipowicz rolls into that room, and he tells the cameraman to get out of here. And then she's like, well, what did they say? He's like, I'm gonna tell you in a minute. And then right after the camera guy gets out, Martinez and Medavoy jump in. Sipowicz goes, I got this. And Medavoy goes, no, Andy. And
yeah, and then they have like a little back and forth, no.
And then Medavoy turns into the hard ass saying, like, you lied to us. Your story is bullshit. And she's like, look, I was right about the two other people. It just wasn't those two other people. And then she mentions it was a mob guy and that's hooked up. And he said he was going to kill me otherwise. And Sipowicz is like pacing in the back. And he's like, you're going to let her give you the shit. Like, he's just randomly yelling. Just randomly, like, yelling over them, like, oh, you gotta believe this one! And, like, it's...
Well, like, he's all riled up, and then he was expecting to go in there and, like, release this anger and all this frustration. And then he ends up basically getting blue balls from it.
Oh, yes, he's got assault blue balls.
For sure, like, he was ready to go in there to, like, beat this woman up, hurt her, like, scream and yell at her, make her scared that she was, like... for her life, and he doesn't get that chance because Martinez and Medavoy are saving his job, basically.
Yeah, that. I mean, this is the point. Well, we have one more bit of scene before we can have that discussion.
Yeah, we have a weird ending too.
She gives up the name Vicky and John Latola. I think that's what I wrote down here. Basically, Vicky was a girl she ran this game with, and then her father showed up and murdered the guy that they were trying to get over. And she mentioned that she hid the DOA's wallet in his car, but she doesn't know their address or where to find them. And Sipowicz just bounces to get a phone book, which was weird. I wrote down, Sipowicz angrily gets the Yellow Pages. Martinez walks out and says, hey, do you have a number for that guy? And Sipowicz is like, don't you ever queer my play in an interview again. And gets the phone number. He comes up with one of those bullshit NYPD Blue things where it's like, oh, yeah, previous caller, you're going to have to come in and fix some paperwork, which is just a ploy to get them into the room. He hangs up the phone. He's like, do you understand what I'm saying? And they're like, what play was that, Andy? Go tune this woman up and then lose her as a testifying witness. And then
yeah, I was actually very proud of Medavoy.
Well, it was Martinez.
Oh, Martinez, that's what I meant. I was very proud of Martinez and the way he, like, he took care of that. I thought that was great.
Sipwitz is basically, Sipwitz stands up and says, no, I'll just beat your ass in the alley, which is, he says it in a much more poetic way, but it's him just saying, no, I'm going to go kick your ass because you didn't let me beat up a woman.
For the most part, that's what he says.
On the second watch, I noticed that Martinez's lines were dubbed. Because the first line is, look, like, basically, I think the first line is, with Bobby getting these tests, which seems like a dubbed line, and then it cuts back to Martinez, and it says, you're a pain in the ass, don't know how to be concerned without making other people feel miserable, and I'll tell you that here or downstairs.
Oh, I didn't think those were dubbed. I know what you're talking about. Well, I know the scene.
The second part where he says, you're a pain in the ass, I don't know, that doesn't know how to be concerned, that part is definitely not dubbed, but the whatever the setup to that sentence, it's not on his face, and it's a different like tone and sound slightly. So I don't know what the beginning of the sentence was before. After Martinez checks,
it could have just been a different. Maybe it was just a different audio from a different scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe.
Like maybe they shot that scene 3 or 4 times, but they had a better audio that they liked or something. I don't know. It's something I could think of. Hey, I don't know, bro.
You don't know the history of the sound. Martinez checks Sipwitz on his shit, and then it cuts to Medavoy, who, like, sheepishly just says, obviously we're all overwrought, which is just funny. I don't know why. The next scene, we have Sylvia getting a warrant for a search of the car while the hooked-up guy comes in with his daughter. And Medavoy takes them into the coffee room. And it's pretty clear that the father won't let her speak.
Yeah, they don't have a great relationship, it feels like.
Not a lot of open and honest, loving communication in that family, it seems. Sylvia says that they have the authorization to search the car. So Andy goes into the room pretending that there's a parking issue and needs to move his car. He's like, hey, you got the white caddy? He's like, what's wrong? He's like, oh, I need to move it to get a bus out of the way. And he goes, you ever drive a Cadillac? And when someone does that, I'm just going to say this. If someone ever said that to me, I'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, is it different than other fucking cars? Or is it a fucking vehicle? Just because you spent more money on it doesn't change the fact that it's a car that goes forwards and backwards based the way cars go. So do you want me to move the fucking car, or do you want to be a fucking asshole? Like, it really pissed me off, because I deal with people like that all the time. Oh, well, I have a nice car. Yeah, you have a means of conveyance that's slightly nicer than other people's. You're not special. You're a dickhead. Just want to say that out loud. I know that it's clear that, obviously, I have some repressed issues with people in nice cars, but fuck that guy. You ever drive a caddy? Oh, you ever drive any vehicle ever? Then how about you shut your face and give me your fucking keys? By the way, you're a murderer and an asshole.
Alright, I mean, fair enough.
Got a little heated when that happened.
Yeah, but the thing is you got heated with nobody.
Well, it's not him. It's other people. He's a stand-in for other people.
You got heated with like no one here. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
no one here.
Anyways, it doesn't matter.
Sipowicz says no.
The thing I was gonna say is. With Cadillacs, other than them being expensive during that time and like having a Cadillac was different, they're also they're longer in the front, so they're a little bit different to drive. That's why when he said that, that's the question I thought he was asking. Part of it was like, you know, I'm a little bit rich and like, you know, this is an expensive car type thing. But also at the same time, it was like, hey, have you ever driven a caddy? Because they're different.
I would say, I understand what you're saying, but he said it as if, hey, you poor fuck, have you ever even seen a Cadillac? Have you ever even breathed the air inside of a Cadillac? Or are you too busy slinging mud for the royals like myself who have Cadillacs? I don't want you to ruin my vehicle. Which is, look, that guy can go fuck himself.
To each their own, dude.
Sipowicz makes the joke, no, yeah, I moonlight as a chauffeur. And the guy gives him the keys, and Medavoy says, those police buses are a parking impediment. And Sipowicz and Martinez check the car. Sipowicz doesn't know how to use the key fob and looks kind of dumb for a minute. He opens the gas cap. Martinez finds the wallet where the, what did I say? The coked up, the hopped up half a hooker with rings in her nose? Where yeah. she said it would be?
Where she said it would, yeah.
Sipowicz finds the blue blazer that they were talking about at the crime scene in his trunk. And Martinez was like, I don't think that the warrant covers the trunk. So then Sipowicz puts it back in.
Yeah, to Sipowicz's credit, he did the right thing and he put it back.
Sipowicz gives a classic dude sorry and handshake, where he doesn't know how to express any other thing other than, yeah, sorry. No, like, admission of what he did and promise to change, just a sorry.
Yeah, and, just on my bad. Like, you know, like, you know I'm a douche.
The old you know I'm a douche sorry.
Yeah, you know I'm a douche. It's all good. We'll just leave it at that, dude.
Martinez says no hard feelings, and they shake hands. As they go to walk back upstairs, Medavoy is chattering them up, basically giving stupid stand-up bits. And he's like, oh yeah, all this technology is supposed to make things easier, but there's all these bugs.
This is what, this is when,
Medavoy shines.
Medavoy is, yeah, when he gets to be like the... Like, he gets to act like the... Like, when he gets to act like a fucking, like, middle American police officer. Where he can act, like, down home and kind of, like, simple and shit. And then he can get people kind of, like, comfortable slash relaxed and keep them, like, occupied. That's what he's, like, good at.
When he seems, you know, simple and whatnot. He really does a good job.
He's a simple-ass bitch.
I believe the term is basic ass bitch, Kyle.
Tomato, tomato.
Sipowicz comes in and saying that the dude is considers himself arrested. They found evidence in his car. He's in trouble with the law now, and the daughter's just like, well, then I can leave. And he's like, no, we're going to talk to you outside. And he's like, she ain't telling you anything. And she starts bitching as she leaves. Sipowicz, once they get him alone, shows him the wallet and then brings up the coat. And then he kind of freaks out and says, I want a lawyer. And that he isn't talking. And that neither is his daughter. And that's the end of that scene. We cut back to the hospital where Russell and Simone are sitting there talking. And Simone's a little peeved. He's a little, you know what, he's got the post-nap of frustrations.
Well, all the drugs have worn off.
Yeah, yeah.
He has a tube up his dick.
He's got a little.
Yeah, I might be a little annoyed too if that was going on with me.
Like, she tries to make pleasant conversation with Simone by saying, like, oh, Jill brought me yogurt and hung out for a little while. And Simone's, like, not even paying attention to what she's saying. And then he just was like, when did that doctor say he was going to be back?
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's like, oh, there was an issue with a guy in, like, room 3. He's like, yeah, well, a guy in room 3, hopefully he's not attached to this fucking machine. Got a tube up my dick. Got a tube up my joint. And then she does, I fucking laughed. I laughed when she's like, is it uncomfortable? And Simone just gives her a look like... You want to know why I laughed? Because I got the same look from Dad when he had his catheter.
It's crazy because I think our dad has had a catheter at least twice.
Oh, and...
Maybe three times? Like, oh, that's a bummer, dude.
And I haven't had one yet, but I don't know. It must be really terrible because the complaints go through the roof the second one goes in. About absolutely anything. Simone then says, especially that face. The face would, because I think what I said to Dad was, okay, come on, it can't be that uncomfortable if you've had it in this long. And his face was like, what the fuck are you saying? Like, just...
Yeah.
Worth it.
I think I said to him one time, it can't be that bad, you're all hopped up on drugs. And then he described, he's like, oh yeah, it's not that bad, I guess, when you can feel a tube being slowly pulled out of your dick. And I was like, God, Dad.
Oh, man. Simone says, don't give me any highlights, that's what she said, that's what he said to do. And then she just straight up tells him, through tears, that he's going to need a heart transplant.
I'm 100% on Simone's side. If that was Maria and she didn't tell me, we would have words.
We would have words.
Like, if the doctor was like, look, I want to talk with you, and I'm going to let you know this now because I can see in your eyes that you're freaking out.
Uh-huh.
So I want to give you some information. He's recovering from a surgery, so he's not going to be able. He's not going to be able to fully understand all of this. So I want to tell him when he's like fully there. I get all of that. If the doctor doesn't come back within like the hour, Maria better tell me. Like we'll I'll deal with it. Like I'll react in a surprising way. I'll do whatever I have to do. But like unless like he comes back within a certain amount of time, I'm hoping Maria tells me.
And how do we know you're serious? You're clapping as you say it.
No, that was an accident.
Oh, okay.
But I hope Maria tells me. Like I would do the same thing like for her. Like there's no way I'm just gonna like sit back and like hold on to some like super important information that she needs to know about.
Fair enough. She tells him what's up and she starts crying and she's like, he said it in a much more positive way. And he just responded with, it's okay, and then the scene ends. Cut back to the house. Fancy gets off the phone with Jill while Sipwitz and Medavoy are talking, and Medavoy says, what if the guy asks for a lawyer again, Andy? And Sipwitz is like, he only asked once as a passing thought. He's not going to bring in a lawyer because it might jam up his daughter. He'd rather protect her. Fancy comes out and says that Jill is going home, and Bobby's got a pump inside of his body now. And Martinez, who was talking with Vicky at the beginning of the scene, actually, and is just trying to get her to give up her dad, very clearly.
But Sipwood says something, like, positive about Martinez, I think, if I remember. About, like, oh, let's give Martinez a shot, see what he can get.
Oh yeah, he says, let's see if Martinez can get her to give up his father, because if she does, he'll just take all the rap to protect her. And sure enough, when Martinez comes over and says, Vicky gave up her father, Fancy says, go at the father, see if he'll protect his daughter, and Sipowicz goes in alone and doesn't bring the Fresca.
Yeah, he doesn't bring, anything.
And the second he gets in, the dad's like, did she talk to you? And he's like, yeah, she talked, and so did this other girl. And then the dad just gives up the whole story. Says that he hasn't seen his daughter, knows that she's doing drugs and living a terrible life. Saw her at a bar that she occasionally frequents. That's an oxymoron. She sees her there going out with some guy and blowing him in the bushes, so he has to kill that guy. That's just how it works, I guess.
Because it's that guy's fault that her mouth's around his dick, right?
Your Honor!
May I ask you
a question?
It's so funny,
I'm kind of falling.
No, didn't that dad at one point, you have to kind of stop and go, like, did she make this decision? Did this action, whatever is leading to her being into this park, like...
Did she put the penis in her mouth, is what you're saying?
Yeah, like, there's a step before murdering the dude, you know? Like, I get, like, it's your daughter, no one wants to see, like... Or their son, like, no one wants to see their kid, like, in a park blowing a dude.
Yeah.
But, like... If it's her choice, like, you just gotta talk to her about it beforehand.
Your Honor, is it his fault that her mouth is on his dick? Point of order.
yeah, like...
Oh, that's funny.
Like, that's what she chose. She wanted to you know, give a beach in the park.
Just give one of them park beaches. Just a park beach behind the park bench.
I call those a PB&J.
Oh, man.
Oh, I think I hear the rock, because you're welcome.
Moana. The father says, you're going to put all this on me. He mentions that he was 27 years clean until this happened, but he wants to protect his daughter.
Didn't they say he was mobbed up?
Yeah, I think that means he used to be. I don't know.
Okay, okay. Because I was going to say, man, if he's done 27 years as a mob guy and has been clean, like, that's a pretty good mob guy.
That's a pretty clean, clean mob guy.
Yeah.
After that scene, Sefwitz comes home and it's clearly late. And Sylvia is like, where were you? And he was like, I was walking outside the hospital like a baby. Sipowicz mentions his prostate troubles. And he's like, I get better from this prostate stuff. And his heart gives out and he's healthier than I am, taking care of himself. And Sylvia's like, you have nothing to do with this, Andy. Which is kind of like the thesis statement of all of their conversations.
Yeah. She, like, this has nothing to do with you personally.
Nothing at all. She,
which is in a weird way, to me, is them saying, like, there is no God.
Okay. We literally do not have enough time to unpack that, but.
Because we all just go at random times, and it has nothing to do with you or how you're living your life.
It just happens.
There is no, like, I don't know, just everything's random. It is what it is. There's no set. Like, you can do everything right, and you're still going to go. Supposedly, the way Andy's talking is, like, Simone's healthy, takes care of himself, blah, 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 but yet he's dying. But Sipowicz, someone who's, like, a drinker, racist, and doesn't take care of himself, is able to survive this prostrate scare and live and keep on going. That's all.
She mentions a story about her grandfather and how her dad was always mean to him as he was dying and then only held hands with him as he was going, which just lessened the time they were together. And then Sipowicz is like, this may not be hopeless. Maybe he'll get out of this, assuming they could find a heart. And then she's like, do you want to pray? And he goes, basically, no. And he's like, but you go ahead. It'd be better from you anyways. And then the episode ends with a dream sequence where Sipowicz and Simone are talking like he's been coming to work, just working the night tour, and it's very weird.
Yeah, very, very weird.
Very bizarre.
Very weird.
Anything else about this episode specifically before we go?
I have a question, and then you don't have to answer it right away. Uh-huh. What do you think will happen first? Do you think we'll die? One of us will die before we finish all of these? Or do you think we'll finish?
I don't know. I honestly think that our lives will prevent us from finishing before we can finish. Whether that results in death or, like, family or new job life or new things like that, I think that'll happen before we can finish.
True.
Unless we shorten the episodes and release them, like, every other week, or every week and all that shit, but I don't know.
Or unless we start, like, doing episodes as, like, we group them together.
Yeah. Or, I mean, I've said it before, if I could get paid to do this, even a little bit less than what I make at my real job, I could make these come out every week and we'd finish, like, at a decent time, but that's just not in the cards. So
yeah, we're not good at it.
Anyway, every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com. Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, where you find a podcast. We're on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast. We're on we're on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod. Wear a mask and be safe and have a good one. Keep watching NYPD Blue, which is on Hulu. Unless the episodes are extended, then you have to go to Amazon and pay $2. Anyway, have a good one, everybody. Peace. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to it, if it has ratings and reviews, because then our show will get seen in the algorithm, and hopefully people will do the most important thing in the world, and that's start watching NYPD Blue. If you need more info in your life and you like reading, there's a couple of books out there, What Would Sipowitz Do?, a collection of articles about the show. There's True Blue, written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. And then there is Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. And if you looked at the timer, you know we have quite a bit more to get through in this episode, and I put a bunch of stuff at the end of it that is spoilerific. If you've already seen the show, if you know what's coming, I think it's pretty heavily hinted what's coming in this season of NYPD Blue. But we talk a little bit about the doctor that's trying to heal Bobby Simone. We talk a little bit about where the show is heading. We expand on that dream sequence at the end and just big picture stuff about NYPD Blue. Anyway, here's that stuff. Have a good one. Wear a mask. Make healthy decisions. Peace. I wanted to mention something, because you had a theory, and now, after watching this episode twice, I think the theory might be sound about this doctor trying to swoop in on Russell, like, as Bobby's dying. Because...
Okay, expand. You have to expand on it.
Okay, so, the first hint was in this scene here in the opening, where he says, glad for the opportunity to converse. Simone then says, her name is Jill... And the doctor cuts him off and says, lie still, and doesn't let him keep talking. I think the doctor was saying, I'm glad for the conversation with Russell.
I support all of that.
Like, he was like, oh, glad for the conversation, and you assume it's about Jill. But what he's actually saying is...
I support all of that because, not to spoil anything, but throughout the whole episode, the doctor doesn't once, like, talk to Jill.
No, he never talks to Jill.
Unless there's a different version that we didn't see, and he talks to Jill, but yeah.
So Simone is like, okay, great. I still have to pee. I still can't breathe, and I'm still really cold. Like you didn't solve those problems.
His response, like, this is the first time that this dude has been like, his responses haven't been very bedside mannerly, you know. Maybe because he's just hoping that he goes, you know? He's trying to get Diane.
Yeah, that was a small hint that maybe he's trying to get at that Diane for himself.
And then knowing what you know... So this is the third time I've only seen this episode. So knowing what you know, like... Yeah, they basically tell you he ain't coming back. When he opens the door to the squad and then the music just goes like... Dun-dun. And it gets all fucking, like, somber and shit. Because I haven't watched these ones a lot. Watching it, I was like, oh, yeah, they fucking tell you this motherfucker's not coming back.
Well, what I think it is, because when you watch the episode, he has this talk with Andy, and it's like, oh, things are fine, you know, they're just not seeing each other right now. And then when he looks over where he works, it's almost like him... It's like him giving him a goal to get back to, which is awkward because it's not his wife? Question mark? Like, I'm going to get better and then this is what I'm coming back to. But then as he's, like, kind of perched over his own desk, he, like, goes to undo his top button and then he wakes up from the dream where he's in the hospital to remind you, like, no, it's really bad right now. Like, it's not normal.
Well, I think, like, when he's with Andy, everything's, like, fine, right?
Yeah.
But then they basically have this conversation, and he goes, you know, I never got that chest, I haven't figured out that chest cold thing yet. And then Andy leaves, he's like, you know, whenever you're back, I'm ready, bam, and walks out. And then it's like, I think it's supposed to recognize that, like, inside, Bobby's letting go of the squad.
Kind of, that's what I thought, too.
Because he goes and he basically looks over the whole squad, and it's this, like, somber moment, and then he unbuttons his thing, and then that, I think that's representing that he can't breathe anymore there. That he's, the chest cold thing is now seeping into the job, and it's gone, and it's taking over that.
Well, I thought, similarly to what you thought, I thought it was part of that, but then I remembered the other dream sequence we had in the beginning of this season, which was about Patsy and the birds.
Yeah.
So I think what's happening is because people say your whole life plays out before you, like, as you die. I think we're doing kind of like a, what we know about Bobby's life before he dies on the show. So it's like we knew that he grew up flying birds, and the only character from his past was Patsy. So we have him there. And now we're dealing with him in this dream sequence with where he worked, where we knew him, and where his relationship started.
But Patsy's dead.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe the squad and the whole conversation with Sipowicz and everything else is him letting go of the real world.
Yeah, depending on your interpretation, knowing that this is episode 3 in a 5-episode arc that ends in him dying, this is the halfway point, and it's kind of us going, yeah, when he was younger, it was the pigeons, it was Patsy, it was growing up in the city. In the middle, it was working in the squad, talking with Sipowicz, becoming his friend. And then I know that some of the weird, weird, dreamy sequences of that 5th episode, it involves all of them saying goodbye. So I think it's kind of like the evolution or de-evolution of him leaving. It's like, oh, when he was younger, when he was in the squad, and now it's him leaving the squad.
To take your point and maybe add to it, yeah, you're right. Maybe like the Patsy and the birds represents his life before we know him.
Mm-hmm.
And then this dream sequence right now represents the middle part of his life and where he's at and the squad and the people that he loves now. Which is weird, because wouldn't he... We'll talk about this part, too. Hold on, let me finish this, the thing I'm going to say, because I have another thing that I thought of, but we can talk about later. There's the before that, there's the squad, and then in the, I think it's the 5th one, he is in a dream state when he's, like, dying, but he's talking to Diane. So maybe that's the final, that's the last spot, is, like, that's his last dream sequence of him letting go of everything, is him letting go with Diane.
Yeah.
And so maybe the two of that, like, maybe there's two were in the dream, and then one, there are no more dreams. He's had to let go of everybody. The only person that's left is Diane. I don't know. Maybe that goes that way. The other thing I was going to say is, as this man is dying, we don't get one fucking dream sequence of the wife he loves so much and, like, fucking changed his whole life for, and, like,
you want to know why?
Nurse her through her cancer. We don't get one mention of that shit.
Oh, his first wife.
Yeah, his first motherfucking wife that he, like, almost, like, quit the job for because, like, he wanted to take care of. Basically, like, couldn't go on a date until he met Diane for, like, you know what I mean? Like, we don't even, like, he doesn't mention her, like, there's not even a mention about her. Like, it was very weird to me. Yeah. That was really weird, too. But that we can talk about when we get more into that as well.
Like, there should be at least a scene, like, when he leaves Diane, and suddenly he's walking straight and he can breathe, and then a woman shows up who's just smoking hot. Like, the hottest woman in the world, because it's Bobby Simone. And then he's like, oh my god, you're here! He's like, yeah, you're dead, now we can fuck for eternity. And then it's just like, ooh, Diane, Well, since the Mormons were right, he'll just choose what planets they can go to. Anyway.
Yeah, that'll be good.
But yeah, we got two more episodes of this tale.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. I just wish sometimes that NYPD Blue was on a HBO or a Showtime or something.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been the original.
I think if they're going to do another one, they really have to do it on, like, HBO. Or, like, even an FX where you, like, The Shield, right? Like, you can make it more Shieldy.
Or like, it could be an online exclusive. Like, if they did a deal with Hulu, true. Or they did a deal with, like, HBO Max, where you can still curse. Yeah, you can still curse and do that kind of shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be... Especially not with what's going on now.
Fuck yeah.
And NYPD Blue tried to be, like, in the now when they were doing their stuff. Like, So because we started the 6th season, I just have been watching random ones as it's kept going. And so when you get into the 7th season, there's a whole, like... There's the whole thing about the 41 shots. They write that in there, like... So I feel like now would be a pretty interesting time to see all of that play out.
But, it would also be good for them to kind of... It'd be good for them to kind of reckon with the fact that NYPD Blue still played, like, the hero cop angle, even though they know how flawed they all are. you know?
Yeah.
So, like, they could bring it in to be like, look, we gave you guys a lot of rope when you while you're clearing cases and stuff, but Andy Sipowicz is not a good person for a lot. Like, this episode's perfect. Like, two dudes prevented him from possibly assaulting a woman. And they just accepted that as part of their job. They're like, well, we got to stop Andy from doing this because he'll screw up our case. They don't even do it because something bad will happen to him. They do it because it'll screw up and make the case harder. Which is like, guys, you shouldn't hit women to get information.
Like, yeah, no matter what. Like,
yeah, so it's you know. Anyway, I gotta.
You gotta go. But you could also what you could also try to do is like in the episodes, you could have Andy be or have this new character be that type of cop, and then you could have to show like someone struggling with what they do. I don't know. There's a lot of things you could do, but yeah, you gotta go. Anyways.
Well, we have. Hey, look, we have a lot more episodes to talk about it because we're only about halfway through, a little less than.
Yeah, for sure.